Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Squanderlust, the podcast about the emotional side of money, why our actions aren't always as good as our intentions, and what we can do about it. I'm your host, Martha Lawton. Today's episode is all about families, especially complex families. That's to say those that have split apart and formed anew, potentially with additional members. We're talking stepkids and half-siblings and exes and ex-in-laws and all the financial and emotional complexity they can bring. As I'm on my first and hopefully only marriage and have no children as of the time of recording, I've got an expert guest with me in the form of the wonderful Catherine Thomas Humphreys, aka The Finfluencer. Catherine is a qualified financial advisor, coach, speaker and podcaster, and specialist in supporting families to have better financial relationships. Before we begin, I want to thank all of our lovely listeners who have stuck with us from the beginning and those who are just joining us. It is wonderful to have you with us. And I especially want to shout out those of you who have reviewed the show in Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser or your favourite app, wherever that might be. Recent listener Hello Wonderful Podcast, great name, gave us 5 stars and noted that I am gentle in allowing guests to tell their story. And I love that. Thank you. I really do try. I read all our reviews, so please keep them coming. They help potential listeners decide to give us a go. So they're really important. Yours could be the one that tips the balance for someone. Okay, Catherine, welcome to the show. Tell our listeners a bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute joy and I love the introduction. So my name, as you've said, is Catherine. I founded a business called The Finfluencer. Not because I think I am, but because I genuinely believe every single one of us has everything we need to influence our relationship with money. And as per the podcast theme, that it is based on both the emotional side, but also the practical side. At the time of recording, I am on my second marriage and I have 3 children. And what I've learned along that journey is that personal finance, so me today versus future me, is quite a straightforward, linear process, for want of a better term. But as soon as you start bringing people in and then having relationship breakdowns and then new relationships and those half-brothers, siblings, it not only changes the practical elements of money, but it also can bring new emotional effects of money in there. So I love working with families. I don't know if it's the problem solver in me, but I love the slightly more complex scenarios. And I think, again, from personal experience, but also the clients I see, that sometimes we can feel a little bit judged. Our situations may not be quite as 2.1 children, quite as kind of, what's that word? Straightforward, conventional, that's the word I was looking for, as others. And this then adds another layer into that complexity. So I trained as a financial advisor, which I really liked. But the bit that was missing for me was what you'll know that coaching brings is that transformation where someone is given the tools they need to own their finances, to really influence and shape them, to empower them to step forward. So that's what I now do. I just do the financial coaching, but I use all that advisor experience along with my personal family experience over the past 30 years to help families in those more complex situations.
Yeah, I was looking at your website and you've been on your own journey with your own money, haven't you?
I have. I have. And it took me a while to be really comfortable sharing that. Mm. So I did start young. Mm. I thought, what's the hardest financial and emotional path I can choose? I know what. I'll be a single mom from day one, which I loved. I absolutely love being a mom. I love my daughter. But what that younger version of me kind of stormed into, thinking, hey, I can do this. After a few years, and I describe it a little bit like the difference between acute pain and chronic pain, you can manage discomfort for a little while, but as it kind of builds on and on and on, it's very draining. Mm-hmm. It's quite anxious. You're feeling very responsible all of the time for not only yourself, but a little person. And the reality is, from my experience and the people I work with, that when we're in a position of stress, financial stress or strain, we don't necessarily make great choices elsewhere. It's much easier to make a good life choice when you've got a financial foundation. But when something's affected that, it does change our decision-making processes, our own sense of value and who we choose. So yes, I did go from that to a relationship that was not good for me, probably not good for him either. And that one ended in divorce. So third time lucky. I wouldn't change him for the world. He does make me laugh. But he's impossible to coach in the money wise. So I do test nearly everything I do on him just to see how unsuccessful it is.
You know what? I mean, if I had married, you know, previous long-term partner, I would, you know, this would be second marriage. So and I'm very glad I didn't. So, you know, no judgment also from this side as well. You know, everybody has their own journey and everybody does different things. And as you said, when you are experiencing stress, particularly around money, but any source of kind of long term stress, it does impact on your thinking and your decision making. And it does make things really difficult in terms of life choices. I think that might be something we'll circle back to again later on, perhaps. So, I mean, I think that like makes it very clear why you decided then to specialize in families and especially these sometimes called blended families. Was it just the desire to apply your own experience?
I think it was going through some uncomfortable financial moments. So whilst it was always difficult, there was a really good element to me in terms of surviving. So I've never been a big spender, so budgeting was quite easy. And I discovered a talent for magicking money because you have to. And I think it is that necessity is the mother of all invention. And I didn't really realise actually they were great skills that I had because I was just seeing that I'm in a difficult financial position, therefore, AKA, I'm not very good at this. So it was recognising that was something I was naturally good at. Second to that, I think a couple of experiences. So I remember when I wrote my first will, this is a story I've shared before. So I was still quite young, and I know from doing this day to day that 6 out of 10 of us don't have a will. So the fact that I was around about 19, sat in a solicitor's office, I thought was quite responsible of me.
Yeah, definitely. But
you wouldn't have known it from the experience. It was very cold. It was very critical because I wasn't there to leave a lot of money because that wasn't the situation. I was there to make provision in a guardian for my daughter. So I was doing the right thing. But I found the whole experience quite humiliating, very, very uncomfortable. And I kind of walked out there thinking nobody should have to feel like that. And it was the same again a number of years later when I was going through a divorce and sat in front of a financial advisor. Divorce itself for anyone at all, however well we do it, however kind and caring that we are about each other as we separate, divorce is a traumatic process financially and emotionally. So to sit in front of an advisor and go through this again, feeling very judged, and that was actually the decision for me when I left that I could have done a far better job. and sorry to say that, it was probably the right outcome.
Probably true.
And that nobody should have to be made to feel like that. Mm. And that really, finance is about people. It's not about the pound signs. It's not about the money. It's about that person and their scenario and their situation. So I think those are two key lessons that if I've had this, then other people are having this. And why should we be made to feel like that? So that's kind of what drove the financial advice decision. And I think I just get families more because it's not easy to talk. It's not easy for people when they, if you imagine speaking to a financial advisor and you go through a quite harsh, hard fact finding, what's your income, what's your spouse, what's your children? And if you do that without the softness and without the compassion, the actual experience can be quite uncomfortable. And I don't think people deserve that. I think as just humanness should be there. So I think it was because I could feel it and empathize, it just drew me really toward working with that particular type of client.
I'm sure there are a lot of families who are really grateful to be able to speak to you and feel that empathy from you and that understanding. And yeah, I completely agree with you. Nobody should be made to feel humiliated or judged for doing the responsible thing and going to see a professional for advice, whether that's legal advice or whether it's financial advice. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous, incredibly counterproductive. So yeah, no, that's... Oh, those stories frustrate me, I have to say.
Yeah. So, and it doesn't take much, does it? I mean, it's just a few extra moments of just kind of care and compassion, a bit of extra space around it can make all the difference for someone to make their journey far more pleasant, far more positive, and something they can build something new from.
So I want to dive into some of the things that you see. So what are some of the most common financial issues that you see in blended or complex families?
Yeah, so they tend to be twofold. So on one side, you'll get the additional emotional side, especially in and around trust, and how those feelings would impact our willingness perhaps to enter a new partnership, financial partnership. And then on the other side, you've got quite pragmatic, practical sides. So I think one of the most common things I see is, for example, if we are to pass away, what happens then to the money?
Right.
Now, when we are single versus when we're married, this isn't necessarily how we go into a blended family. So after a divorce, some people just decide they don't want to get married again. So they'll go into a blending family and they maybe have their children, perhaps the other person has theirs, without realizing that actually that marriage, that structure, that legal entity actually protects them to some degree. Whereas without that, they are less protected. And I'll go a little bit more into what I mean by that in just a moment. And then I think we also forget or don't consider, or it's just never a kind of conversation, is what happens when we don't make a decision, whether that's about our pension or our will or where our money goes, that the rules that then automatically apply do not support the new types of families that we see now. So the typical example here is if you die without a will, you fall into intestacy, and the rules of intestacy are based purely on marriage and next of kin. So as soon as you're going through a system of who is physically related to you, you can see there that any stepchildren are going to get missed out. If you're not married, then you can potentially not, you can effectively disinherit the person you would consider to be married to. So these structures, the way that we do family in via marriage in this country, but also the way that we leave our things when we die in this country, are based on very old principles that do not match up. So I would say it's just kind of tuning into, does my family structure protect everybody I love in it? And as soon as you start to see that this is about people, and what these rules that are wrapped around them is, then you kind of, it's really just picking up the flag. So these are triggers. So if you're not married, that's a trigger. Mm-hmm. If you've got children from different relationships, then that's a trigger. And it just means that you need to sit back and think. In these extreme scenarios, I think death is a good example because we're no longer there to make the decisions. Yes. So without us as that decision maker, then what is happening? So it's a kind of crystallizing, if you like, mm-hmm. a way of shining the light on, does your family structure and your financial structure work to support those you love? And then I think on the emotional side, it's the conversations. Mm. So I mentioned earlier that divorce is challenging. Even good divorces are challenging for men and women. Mm-hmm. You go through, you might lose a house. One of you might feel like they've lost a portion of their pension in that settlement. Whether that was fair or not doesn't change the fact that that person would have felt that loss. Mm-hmm. And then how do those feelings of loss and trust and all the experience before, plus the financial anxiety, how does that inform our willingness to have a financial relationship with someone, and more importantly, how to have a really healthy conversation? So we tend to get silence and more separation in terms of money. So I try really to foster that space where you can bring a good conversation to the table without the argument, but without compromising on your values, where you can make space to create shared values for that shared new family, and then make sure you've got the financial structures underneath it to support everyone.
Yeah, so a couple of things in that. Obviously, we're talking about the legal structure of marriage in the UK, particularly, I imagine, England and Wales. Scotland's system is slightly different from England and Wales, but the broad brushstrokes of it are the same, that there are different protections for people who are legally married from those who are just living together. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around this, because there's this phrase, common law marriage, which has no legal standing whatsoever, and people sort of assume that it means something legally, and it just doesn't. And they assume that just living together for long enough somehow entitles people to something that it doesn't. And that is, yeah, it's something that you really don't want to discover at that worst possible time of bereavement. So, yeah, I completely agree with you that it's really important people understand the legal difference between being married and not being married and how that actually works. It's so vital. Are there any other things that come up beyond that trust issue of the parents or new partners, you know, and how they're able to interact? Is there? I was imagining something around fairness between children, if there are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly where I was nodding.
Go on.
It's emotive. It's highly, highly emotive. So I know how I feel about my children. So, and the way I've blended, actually, my husband didn't have his own children. So we have one and I have two from previous. But what I see is, especially where you've come in and perhaps those children are adult children, that one of you wants to treat your children fairly, the other one wants to treat their children fairly, or you might have a child that is yours that perhaps feels like you should treat even more fairly, and it causes conflict. And I tend to see this, I see it in all areas, but it really shows when it comes to writing a will. And what I tend, so I always write the will with the people individually, because it's almost impossible for one of them to be saying, actually, I don't like his kids and I don't want to leave anything to them. You can't say that in front of it. Very, very difficult. So, and then there's the additional layer. So if he has or she has, one of them has children from the previous relationship, and that the other parent from those children is still also alive, that particular set of children are going to benefit from those two. Whereas when you've come together and you've got one together, you are both responsible for that one. So it's how you have that conversation, that just because you've each got children doesn't mean they all have to be treated in the same proportions. And that's today as well. So it's who's being spent on, whether that's education, college funds, perhaps your scenario is different today than it was with the older children, which is certainly, so how do you make, it's about treating them equivocally rather than actually pound for pound equally. And I think if we can bring that fairness in, that it doesn't have to be the same. So just because there's three children doesn't necessarily mean 33.3% of time, money today and money in the future. And I think if you can have the conversations with the new family, the adults in that family, as to, well, what's important to you and what's important to them. So my mom always used to tell us as kids that compromise was where nobody got their way. And in some senses, that is true, that it's not about finding that happy ground where everyone's happy. It's about what you're not willing to give up and not willing to compromise, and what you're less concerned about, what's less valuable to you. So by coming kind of consciously aware of what your individual values are, so start with you, and then start with your partner, and then bringing them together, and you actually create a new shared set in the middle. And it's what you are willing to share and to compromise on what you're willing not to. So the children are very emotive because they're our children. And when it's nice and straightforward, and then you haven't got an issue.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And I can imagine that all gets amplified if there are differences in income or wealth across different parts of the family. So if either an ex-partner or a new partner has a very different income situation or brings assets that weren't around previously, that I can imagine only exacerbates all of that.
Yeah. And I mean, there are ways of, there's no right way. I think for every new couple, whatever each one of their history, it's for them to decide what's going to work for them. I personally favour what I call interdependence, where you have an area that's shared and where you have an area of still being yourself, your own money, your own finances, your own choices, but also this kind of new shared one. Some people prefer to put everything in where it's all pooled. Some people prefer to have this kind of 50-50 split. There isn't a right way. It's about when you come together, what's going to work for you. It's very unusual to have, I think, in any relationship where both parties arrive equally on the same terms, same income, same experience. So, for example, if you're buying a house together and one of you has the larger assets and the larger savings, there's no rule that says you have to buy that jointly. You could go into it with, for example, as tenants in common, where one of you earns 70% and one of you earns 30%. Now, that works in life, and that works when you pass away, because you're going to leave your proportions to whomever you want to. But that is not recognised in divorce. So you might have come into this relationship with your ideas of who's got how much and what those proportions are. But if you're married for a medium term or longer and you're now getting divorced, as far as the rules and the starting point is there's an equalness. You've entered that marriage. And again, going back to that legal structure that's created. And as long as it's not short, I'm not quite sure where short becomes medium, then it's a 50-50 split as your starting point. I mean, you would obviously want to start a family and have this new family, not planning to divorce. But again, life doesn't work like that. Sometimes I think this is where the trust issue comes back again, that if you have had a poor experience of either loss of earnings or loss of assets from a previous relationship, and now you're entering into one that you don't feel is equal, that can be quite hard to have that conversation. But I think it is very, very individual circumstances. And I think sometimes it does help having someone external to help you have those conversations, because they've got nothing to gain or to take from you. So there's more trust in and around that.
Thank you. Yes, that's really useful. We're going to take a little break there. And when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about the effects of financial conflict within families, some of the ways that this can have an impact beyond just money, and also what we can do about it and what people can do to prevent issues around money arising within their families.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We're back, and we're talking about finances in complex families. So what happens when a couple have broken up and there are children, and now they're together with somebody else? How do we manage the financial implications of all of that? So all the time that you were talking in that first half, I was thinking about the kind of added layer of in-laws and ex-in-laws on top of all of this stuff. So I'd love to hear a bit about them as well, please, Catherine.
Yeah, differing for everyone. I mean, I think if we take out the blended family altogether and just look at, again, us as individuals, we know that our money beliefs have come from potentially our parents and potentially their parents, often set as children, and those habits set off, and we believe those potentially without really interrupting those thoughts until something shines a light on. And there's nothing like a divorce or a family breakdown to kind of shine a light on what our beliefs are. Then when you have, I think it's harder when you have the new family and the children are still young, but there is still a reliance on income from the previous partner. So child maintenance would be the example here. The in-laws, they don't tend to come up as much as you think. I think they have an effect. And I see very, very different outcomes. So I might see someone who perhaps let's say the dad isn't particularly involved, yet his parents want to actively engage and be with their grandchildren. Or perhaps one of them will. Others, you just see an immediate break that they're gone, they're dead to me now. So wow. The in-laws are gone, and the grandchildren are without. So financially, the in-laws, I think, have slightly less effect on the day-to-day. Something that does come up a lot is where the new couple have a child together. And then one or other or both have children from the previous. When it comes to things like Christmas and family gatherings, that perhaps the grandparents of the shared child, which would be the new in-laws, if married, don't recognise or want to recognise the children from the previous relationships. That is quite, I don't want to say common. That is something I do see. And that's very hurtful, not only to the children from the former relationship, but to the parent of those children. And that can cause conflict to them in the actual relationship, because it's your parents that are doing that. Now, again, it depends on how good a relationship you've got with your new partner, because that's where the conversation needs to have and to happen, rather than skip over and go to their in-laws. But I think what it just shows is that we have responses and reactions, and we've got a choice. Am I responding or am I reacting? Which is never as easy as I just made that sound, because we're human and we're emotional and there's all these other things going on.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And it brings up all these feelings about, you know, what is the meaning of family and what does it mean to belong to a family and who do we consider to be family? Or what does it mean to support each other? Feelings about loyalty, feelings about belonging. There's the whole kind of the feelings about generosity and yeah, so many different aspects of of our feelings about people and relationships just all kind of come up together all in that one space. I can see that being so challenging. Actually, you've just reminded me, we did an episode in the last season with Jane Major about gift giving, which some people might be interested in as a comparison with this, where we talked about some of the challenging feelings people have around gift giving. And so if you listen to that one and then apply all those weird feelings people can have about gift giving, and then on top of that, the blended family stuff as well. Wow, it could be quite explosive, I can imagine.
Yeah. I think as well, what we see with blended families is quite big age gaps.
Mm, yeah.
So because you've tended to have one, and then maybe 10, 15 years later, that there might be another. So it's almost like, well, how do we treat the adult who is a child?
Yeah.
And how do we treat the child who is still a child? Gift giving. And I think it comes back to your point earlier, which is around about this idea of fairness.
Yeah.
Because my idea of fairness to my children may not be their idea of fairness to each other. So I think if you're comfortable yourself, that you've explored what is right for you and what feels fair to you, then actually that sort of ripples through, not quite unconsciously, but because you believe it and you know it and it's in line and authentic to you, then those around tend to pick up on that. I think when you don't quite feel it's fair, then somehow or another that message seems to quietly to get through to everyone.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So we're talking a lot here about some of these issues of like financial conflict. You said at the beginning that, you know, when people are struggling financially or when there is this sort of financial conflict, it often has a knock-on effect onto other aspects. Can you talk about some of those knock-on effects into other aspects of people's relationships?
Yeah. So I try to avoid the term scarcity and abundance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this example, it's quite useful. So when you're under financial stress, for example, it's like a kind of gnawing anxiety in the background. It's very, very difficult to step aside from that. I think even if, for example, changing a job or setting up a business, that backdrop of the financial stress, mm-hmm. is affecting what decision you're going to make next.
Yeah.
And it's very similar with our decision, for example, to leave a relationship. If you're highly financially reliant on that relationship, so you have children together, perhaps they're the higher earner, then making a decision to leave, for example, an exit strategy can be difficult because you're trying to make a decision within this framework of scarcity. Mm. When you are away from that, so if you are able to just imagine erasing all of these financial concerns and the knock-ons, the decision you might make could be very, very different.
Yeah.
So that example of if you're in a relationship that isn't working for you for whatever reason, but financially you don't feel able to leave that, then your decision-making is being affected by that financial situation.
Yeah.
So I think a way to look at it would be to almost imagine the scenario of what if, and take all those finances away, what decision would I make under a different mindset, under a different situation? So that's one. Second to that is, and I alluded to it earlier with the marriage that I chose that wasn't working for me. Because the finances don't look great and you don't think you're valuable, that's actually directly correlating to what you think about yourself. So if I don't think I am valuable, then the decision I make in terms of maybe the person I spend time with or the type of job I'm going to go for is being directly reflected based on this inner belief of, am I valuable? So when we are making a new decision for ourselves and the starting point is, I'm not very worthy or I'm not deserving, we will make a different decision than the person who thinks, I am valuable. And that decision isn't just financial. That decision will be about the people we spend time with and the opportunities that we start to choose and make for ourselves. And I think it's more of a game, but one way of exploring this that I do with people I work with is to give them a set of scenarios based on today. Mm-hmm. So based on what you know about your financial situation today and your feelings, everything as it is, what's your response to X, Y, and Z? Mm-hmm. So that scenario might be how to increase your prices or imagining that you had a gift given to you or imagining you had to give the gift. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to just become aware of what your belief is and what your financial circumstances are. And then play the same thing again. But for that part of the game is to suspend any reality and use the imagination. Well, what would I do if that financial situation was different? So let's say if I didn't have those concerns, if I didn't have that limiting belief or that scarcity. So kind of like a millionaire mindset, if you like. And if you're seeing very different responses, then that's kind of indicating that perhaps the decision you're making is based in and around your finances.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of courage to leave a relationship when you don't feel financially secure.
Yes, of course.
And I think that is something that we need to acknowledge when someone is working with us, that that courage and that bravery, they have gone through that knowing that it was going to be difficult. So I always admire people for that. Likewise, I think if you want to change and set up a business, it's very hard to make that decision if you're from a position of needing and being highly reliant on a low income. So when we can just scale that financial situation back and look at us and explore us and our beliefs and our values, what would we do differently? So it's not to wave a magic wand and say, I'm going to make your whole life better overnight. But it does give us kind of space to think, OK, am I making my decision based on today? Am I reacting or am I responding? So they're highly, highly correlated, how we value ourselves and how our financial situation is.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find when couples have been working with you and they've been working on all these issues or when individuals have been working with you on this and it's having an impact on how they're dealing with their finances and their families, what do you see in terms of how the family dynamics change or the family relationships change?
Yeah, this one really surprised me. And I've currently got 100% accidental success rate. So whilst I work with blended families, I tend to work with the one party, the one parent, the one person, because they're ready. They've come to me because they want to change. And I think you'll know as well that you've got to be on your side. You've
Absolutely.
Got to be wanting to do this.
Yeah.
And I think because there are so many correlations. I think you used the gift-giving scenario earlier. That relates highly to how we want to be receiving. So not just can I receive money, can I receive love? Also, can I give? Do I want to give? Who am I supporting? So what I'm tending to see is people will come to me thinking that they are wanting to, inverted commas, fix their finances, and that might be to stop an out of control spending habit. That out of control spending habit is being triggered by their emotional response to something, whatever their something is. And as soon as they start to address the emotional triggers that are behind it, which might be that maybe they don't feel valuable or they're trying to prove to themselves that they deserve, Or the opposite scenario, which I see just as often, which is they are so restrictive in their budget, there's no space for them because they don't allow themselves to receive because they've carried this belief that they don't deserve. So when you start to see that in the money relationship and they recognize it, and as in they feel it, they hear it, they know it, and have that aha moment, that automatically ripples out into their job opportunities, their choices, their ability to go and ask for a pay rise. And the feedback from my clients is that suddenly their relationship with their partner is also improving.
Yeah.
Because they know themselves, they know what's valuable to them. So they have a really good conversation now that's not kind of infused with emotions. They're willing to accept money from their partner. They're willing to be supported and they're also willing to support their partner. So I've seen, as I say, 100% that they're getting married, they're moving in together, they're buying a house together. And there's all these lovely, lovely positives that are coming as a result of what we thought was dealing with their money.
Yeah. Yeah. This, I mean, it's lovely to hear that. I'm not completely surprised, but it's always so great to get that confirmation that you know, resolving whatever that issue is that is having a kind of negative, cyclical, you know, reinforcing relationship between some kind of emotional issue and money. And when you can resolve whatever that negative cycle is, it just frees people up to become more intimate and more comfortable. And just have a better relationship with others because they're resolving something in themselves. And that's just, it's just lovely. I love hearing that. It's great.
Yeah. It was a surprise, I'll be honest. I thought, hey, I'm here, the money woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then the testimonials would come back saying, oh, we've moved in together. Or you've saved my relationship. And I'm so... but when I thought about that, I thought that's exactly how it was for me when I went through my own kind of healing, for want of a term. I couldn't have been open to that love and that reliance until I was ready to. But I think the money is just, that's where it shows up.
Yeah.
That's some way you can kind of get a visual of what that habit is or what that behaviour is.
Yeah.
And obviously we need money on a day-to-day basis. So
exactly.
It is something that needs addressing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely, and so that's a very rewarding part. And if you are seeing it in your money, and now that you've heard that, then it's just, well, how else is this feeling showing up? How else is this not spending or not receiving showing up in my relationship, either with my partner, my parents, my children, but mainly your partner?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked a bit about, you know, the difficulties and the conflicts and all of that stuff. And we talked about how, you know, coaching can make this such a fantastic difference. I'm wondering what people can do for themselves to prevent some of these conflicts and issues arising. So first of all, you know, at that point of breaking up, do you have any tips for people to try and, as I said, sort of prevent some of these issues arising?
Yeah. I think the first thing is to honour that it is a motive. And that we're going to be reacting to a situation. So I would probably say that if you're trying to have a relationship with a former, or you're trying to separate and you're trying to do that well, mainly because maybe you've got children and you want to do this well for them.
Yeah.
Then I would say make space, because you're not going to turn that emotion off. It's not going to be all of a sudden I'm going to approach this very pragmatically and all very grown up and do it all very well. The reality is it's emotive and there's going to be pain. There's going to be discomfort. So I think it's to acknowledge that first and then say, OK, in the face of that, I need to make space around myself. So I never react. If I didn't like the text message saying, oh, you haven't done this, or we need to do that, is just step back from it. Let your immediate response happen. That's your emotional response. And that's as valuable as anything else. But don't necessarily knee jerk response with what you actually want to tell them. Is to make that space. So you have moved from acknowledging But instead of reacting, acknowledge, honour, and then respond.
Yeah.
I think get support.
Yeah.
Find other people who've been through it. It hurts. And find that support both in kind of informal circles, but also in your formal circles. And that would be having a team of advocates for you. Not like the will writer and the financial advisor I had.
Yep.
There are so many more great people out there, and I found them.
It's true.
Have your financial advisor work with your solicitor, and have a team that are going to be there advocating and supporting for you. And step back and think, what's important? I said earlier that compromise is where no one gets what they want. You're not all going to get something that you want from this. But if your most valuable thing is to make sure, for example, your children feel safe, or your children are going to have a really good relationship with your ex, even though you don't feel you can, which is also absolutely fine. What's valuable to you? What do you need to leave this conflict without giving too much up on? Then there's quite a few sort of other things, like there are apps where you can communicate. There's kind of shared co-parenting going forward, but I think I would probably say
that's a good start.
Is, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
React. Don't react.
Yeah.
In space and then respond.
I, you know, while you were talking, I just remembered the fact that one of the most important lessons I learned in my 20s was not to try and be a grown-up about breakups. When I was young, because I'd always been told, oh, you're very mature for your age, I thought when I went into my sort of first relationship, when I was in my late teens and then sort of a little bit in my early 20s, I thought I had to try and be a grown up, and that being a grown up meant trying to still be friends with my exes. Mm. And it would inevitably result in like just a couple of months of like tense attempt at friendship, and then just some kind of horrible explosion and big drama, and everything would be really messy and awful fairly soon after that. And so just learning not to try and, you know, pretend to be a grown-up about this. Feel what you really feel. And then, but separately, away from them, not at them. And then come back and deal with it, you know, when you're ready. But to give yourself enough distance that you're not having to be so raw. You know, you're not putting your most painful, vulnerable self in that position of having to interact with that person. You're doing it on your terms, I think is so, so important. And of course, in these much more serious scenarios where there are children involved and significant sums of money, then obviously, you know, all of that is way more important.
Yeah. And I think as well that if you're feeling it, the reality is they're going to be feeling something. It's a different program.
Yeah.
It's a different set of feelings. You are both feeling and experiencing something.
Yeah.
So it's how can we do that with as little damage?
Yeah.
And, you know, so what if we have a meltdown?
Yeah.
Because I've done it wrong and I'm still here.
That's true.
We can't sort of tiptoe through perfectly. There'll be times we say and respond and react and do the thing that we probably ought not to have done.
Yeah.
But that's human. So don't be so harsh on ourselves as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Might be something to do.
Yeah. I wanted to ask as well some tips for the next sort of step, which is getting together with a new partner. Or when an ex gets together with a new partner, do you have some tips around that as well, please?
Yeah. So all sorts of things have gone through my mind. And I think it's because there's so many levels, isn't it?
Of course. Yeah.
So I think from a financial perspective,
yes,
of getting together with a new partner, the sooner you can bring money to the table, so to speak, the better. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that you turn up on your first date and, you know, insist on seeing everything, but it is an opportunity to sort of think, there's an opportunity for a conversation here. Are you splitting the bill, for example? Or have you gone on a free walk? Or if you've gone round to their house, is there a pile of envelopes? So I think is you are now going to go into a new relationship. It may or may not work, but the sooner you are aware of your money habits and their money habits, and might this work financially as well as kind of soulmatey and emotionally. So I think the sooner you can have that conversation, the better. And especially if they have children and you have children, to go right back to the beginning where we talked about this sense of, are they going to be treated fairly? Are you picking up on the fact that perhaps he's not so interested in your children? Now for so many experiences, you bring a child in and they're sort of super interested in trying to be interested in your child as well as you, but they quickly lose interest. So I think just be aware that you're going to go into a relationship, what money behaviours and money habits, bearing in mind now that you've got your money beliefs and your unconscious program running, your ex had theirs and this new partner will have theirs. And do you think that there's an opportunity for open conversation and a shared goal? And you know, if you're picking up signs early on that it isn't, personally I'd walk away. Because you want a good relationship, you want an open relationship, and it'll be done your way and it'll be done in what is equal and fair for you. That would be for you to decide. But if you kind of get the feeling that there's not going to be that openness or opportunity to talk, is it wrong to say walk away?
No, I mean, I'm with you. No, honestly, it's such a huge part of relating to somebody. Is how do you handle your finances together? It is inevitable that conflict will arise there. And I think if we then even go back to what we were just saying about how you feel about money and giving and receiving is a lot about how you value yourself, then if you can't have that open conversation about money, how can you have an open conversation about other areas of your life where you need to give and receive with each other? So I think you're right. I think it's actually really important and a big enough red flag to potentially consider walking away if you don't think you can have that conversation, because it has to happen at some point. So if you can't do it, you're just storing up trouble for the future, I think, and it's vital. What about when an ex gets a new partner and possibly their sort of family situation changes, and then that could impact your relationship on the children that you had together or the child you had together? Is there anything that you have to say about that?
Yeah. So again, this, I think, is down to having as good a relationship as you can with your ex under whatever the circumstances are. So I'm not saying you need to be best friends at all, but is there a kind of channel of civility where the children are at the centre of what each of your decisions are? So again, it's going to be all those different layers. But if, for example, it shouldn't affect a maintenance payment, for example, because that ex-partner is still going to be earning the income they have and seeing that your child, as long as that doesn't change for the same amount. So really that part shouldn't change. What I do tend to see happening is that perhaps the new partner doesn't really want your child coming round at the weekends. So the challenges tend to be in and around how can we keep this child's relationship with their parent, the absent parent in this case, at the centre of it. So I think very much like going into the new one, it's how do we have those really open conversations? And it's not easy. And I think this, again, is about having space. Again, maybe having that support network. Who can you react to first before you go and then say what it is that you want to say? Some people have said that they've had quite a lot of success with actually building a relationship with that new partner. It doesn't work for everyone, but sometimes, you know, if you're both acting on behalf of that child, then that can help, because then it's not a them versus us. I think what I tend to see, though, is you will get a change. You will get a change in the regularity of seeing your child. You will get a change in whether they want to continue paying the amount that they've been paying. So it's just come back of what's important to me and to my child, and what am I willing to compromise on and what am I not?
Yeah.
So in my case, I was not willing to compromise on my child being seen less, because to me, the relationship with their ex, my ex, was more valuable. But then there were other times where, well, I need that maintenance payment. So, and it's your child, and I'm not the only one who's going to be financially responsible for what we've done together.
Yeah.
So, and it all sounds terribly grown up, doesn't it, when I say it? And yeah, I think it is. You will get it wrong. But make that space and kind of grace and honor for yourself to get it wrong. And just come back to what is really, really valuable to you of all the things you can have. Which ones are you refusing to compromise on? Because those ones are too valuable to you. And I guess it's that old saying, you know, pick your battles. Which ones are you willing to get involved with and expend your energy and time on fighting for?
Fantastic. Thank you. On that note, Catherine, it's been fantastic, really insightful talking with you. Where can our listeners find you?
No worries. So as I mentioned earlier, my business is called The Finfluencer, which is just the blended word. Not that blended is the term there for financial influencer. So you can find me at www.thefinfluencer.co.uk. And from there, you should be able to find any of the events I do. I run a monthly money date, which is free. So you'll be very welcome to come along and we'll just go through some of the dating aspects in and around our money and ourselves, either the emotional or the skill side. And I think from there, you should find all of my social media, mostly Instagram, if you want to share some of the financial wisdom, for want of a better word. And I'm always available either by DM on Instagram or by email. So please just reach out. If I can be of any support whatsoever, then I will reply.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And you're also a part of the Women and Money Cafe, aren't you?
I am. So, and you'll be joining us as a guest
as
well.
I'm excited.
So myself and my friend and co-coach and financial planner, Julie Flynn, co-host the Women and Money Cafe podcast. We are joined every single week by a team of experts, either advisors, coaches, or experts in their field. And then we also bring in really interesting guests. We release every Monday, and you'd just be welcome to download, to listen. And pretty much as I run my business, you can contact Julie and I through there, and we check every email and every review.
Fantastic.
So definitely do come and listen and share your thoughts and experiences.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Catherine. It has been a joy.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you, Martha.
If you enjoyed Swanderlust, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, and rate us too. The more stars you give, the happier we get. And don't forget to tell your friends about us. Swanderlust is sponsored by Wardour Studios in Fitzrovia, London, with production by David Smith, Charlie Brandon King, and Alicia Cunningham. Our theme music is by Wardour Studios and graphic design by Jason Reed. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.